Later that night, Valentine went through the solemn and rather infuriating ritual of composing his daily report to General Martinez. He labored over the wording at the end of the report.
At approximately 1820, we sighted a barge moving up the Arkansas River. Our howitzer battery took it under fire. After 10 minutes sustained shelling, the tug cast off from the sinking cargo. The battery shifted targets to the tug, which ran aground and was subsequently destroyed by howitzer fire. Counter battery fire from the Pulaski Heights mortars caused 2 casualties. A loader was wounded in the foot, and the battery fire direction officer, Lieutenant Colonel Kessie, suffered head trauma resulting in a concussion when a shell exploded near her. I hope to report that she will return to duty shortly, as she was still training and organizing her crews. The battery is now under the command of a first sergeant I promoted to lieutenant. Lieutenant Hansen completed the battery action. Enemy troops continue to concentrate in front of us. Eventually, larger weapons will be moved to Pulaski Heights, making our current position untenable and offensive action impossible. The mortar tubes are dispersed and guarded from the riverside, but I believe the New Columbia area to be open to attack from the hills in the west. I respectfully suggest that a movement by your command in our direction will allow us to control central Arkansas and pressure Hot Springs from the north as other commands push up to join us. My staff has a detailed plan worked out. Establishing closer contact would go far toward coordinating the actions of our commands to the benefit of Southern Command in general, and the detriment of Consul Solon, and the TMCC in particular.
Writing Martinez was an exercise in futility, but it had to be done, no matter what taste the task left in his mouth. Valentine put a code card in the envelope and sent it to the radio room. He looked around the basement room that served as his office and sleeping area. If a man's life could be measured by his possessions, his life didn't amount to much. A little leather pouch of quickwood seeds, a toothbrush that looked like an oversized pipe cleaner, field gear, and weapons. A report from Stiakowski on her progress in organizing the POWs from the camp into battle-ready infantry. Pages of notes, a terrain sketch on the wall. He was a man of lists. Lists of officer rotations, lists of Quisling brigades and regiments identified in the area. It had doubled in length in the past week. A list of needs for the hospital. God knew where he'd find an X-ray machine. Why did they even ask? X-ray Tango. A man who wanted and needed to switch sides, thanks to intelligence and conscience, but who couldn't bring himself to do it. He collapsed into his bunk, palms behind his head. His scalp was getting past the prickly stage, and the returning black hairs on his head made him look rather like someone on a long walk home from prison. The visible skin of his scalp made even more odd-looking thanks to their presence. He let his hearing play around the headquarters building. Fresh construction made the most noise, hammers and electric saws turning Solon's future meeting rooms and art galleries into living space, with fainter splats from the ground floor above as windows were bricked up into firing slits. Typewriters clattered as clerks cataloged and allocated the stores from the warehouse raid. He could hear Post and Stiakowski talking with the top sergeants and a smattering of lieutenants as they worked out the organization of the Hilltop's men. Many of the prisoners were getting their strength back after a few days of balanced rations and could now be blended into other units. From the communications center, he heard field phones buzzing or jangling. They'd come away with 2 kinds. The ones that buzzed doubled as short-range radios. The jangling ones had been used by Solon's construction staff. Now shakily melded together in a single network, rather like Valentine's ad hoc command. The consul hadn't reacted to his seizure of the residence as quickly or as violently as he'd expected. The Quislings under X-ray Tango had just concentrated on keeping him where he was, rather than prying him off the hill. The forces they'd assembled could overrun him, at no small cost, but so far they hadn't moved beyond the engagement of dueling sniper rifles. Perhaps they couldn't afford a Pyrrhic victory, with Southern Command still on the move in the south. Did they want to starve him out? He had just under 1,600 soldiers and captured Quislings. The latter were digging and hammering together log and soil fortifications under Beck's direction that he could feed for months, if necessary, at full, balanced rations. After the canned meat and vegetables ran out, he could still manage beans and rice for another 10 or 12 weeks. They must have known the contents of the divisional supply train he'd made off with. Of course, the food would run out eventually, but not before Solon had to send most of his boys back to where he'd borrowed them, or Archangel had been decided one way or the other. A few shady quislings had made contact with the forward posts, offering to trade guns and small valuables for food. Valentine's hilltop forces were, temporarily at least, better off than the besiegers. He could just wait for Southern Command to move up after taking Hot Springs, or the less likely relief from Martinez. If he were Solon, he'd destroy the forces in his rear as quickly as possible, before turning his attention to the new threat from the south.
But you're not Solon. You don't know the cards he's holding. He knows exactly how many aces you've got. Except for the Quickwood.
Valentine hoped a few dozen Reapers had already been turned to wooden mummies by the beams he'd passed to Mantia.
What's that whistle? Barrage.
Valentine took up his tunic and ran through the officers' conference room, with Beck's proposed layout still on the blackboard. He entered the radio lounge, where off-duty men gathered to hear news and music piped in by Jimenez and the other operator. Stiakowski was sitting below one of the speakers, fiddling with Solon's old bow and quiver. She'd had an idea to use Quickwood chips for arrowheads. The cane she relied upon was conspicuous by its absence.
What's the whistle?
Thought I heard someone yell Starshell. I haven't heard it followed up with anything. Maybe it's a sec job.
Get to the field phones, please. I want you in the comm center in case it isn't.
Valentine hurried out to the front of the headquarters building. Sure enough, a star shell was falling to Earth. A second burst far above the hill as the first descended. Valentine saw the men atop the building pointing. A few figures hurried to shelters, assuming real shell fire was on the way. A private behind the sandbag wall filling one of the arched windows called to him.
Sir, you don't want to be standing there if a beehive bursts!
He was referring to the flechette-filled anti-personnel rounds fired by larger guns. The cat stood, anxious and upset, listening to the night. Suddenly, he knew why he was anxious. The chills.
Reapers! Reaper alarm!
The sentry on the rooftop froze for a moment, as if Valentine was shouting up to him in a foreign tongue, then went to the cylinder of steel hanging from a hook on the loudspeaker pole atop the building. He inserted a metal rod and rang the gong for all it was worth. Valentine picked up the field phone outside the headquarters entrance and pushed the button to buzz the comm center.
Operator.
Another star shell lit up the hilltop, creating crossing shadows with the still burning earlier one.
This is Major Valentine. Reaper alarm.
Captain, it's Major Valentine. Reaper alarm. Captain Stiakowski acknowledges. Thank you.
Anka appeared in the doorway behind him, a golden-haired genie summoned by the gong. He had a grog gun in his arm and a Quickwood stabbing spear between his teeth. A second spear was tucked under his arm.
This is gonna get...
Valentine shut up as he saw what was coming from the east. In the glare of the star shell, he saw a little two-engined turboprop, the kind used by pre-2022 airlines to hop a few passengers between small cities, roar into the light at 100 feet. The rear door was open.
What the fuck?
One of the soldiers on the roof was watching in stunned amazement. A figure plunged from the plane, trailing a cathedral train of material that whipped and flapped in the air as it fell. A parachute that failed to open? A second one followed it, and a third, all with the same flagellate fabric acting as a drogue for the plunging man figures. Valentine saw another plane behind, a different make, this one coming for him like a missile aimed at his position, its daring pilot almost touching the treetops.
Your shoulder, my David.
Valentine felt the barrel of the grog gun fall against his shoulder. Valentine froze, a human bipod.
No.
The gun jumped on Valentine's shoulder as the grog fired. The plane reacted, tipping its wings to the side. At that height, there was no room for error. The plane veered into the treetops. It roared through them, then struck a thicker bowl and pancaked. Exploding aviation fuel flamed yellow-orange in the night.
Good shot.
Good luck. I guessed to which side the driver sat.
The star shells lit up the first figure's landing in white light and black shadow. It hit the ground running, shrugging off the drapes of fabric attached to it. Only a Reaper could survive such a landing with bones intact. As did the next and the next, striking Earth. Valentine watched, transfixed, and his Valentingle told him where the others were. To the west, climbing the sheer face of the quarry, the one part of the hill almost unclimbable and therefore almost unguarded. He took one of Anka's spears. God, two were headed for the hospital.
Anka, get the bears!
Valentine hurried toward the hospital building. He ran past the old stable building that now housed the dairy herd. He paused in his race and threw open one of the barn doors. If these were the unguided sapper reapers, they might be drawn to the heat and blood of a cow more than a lighter human. A reaper ran across the hillside, leaping from fallen tree to earthen mound like a child hopping puddles, making for the hospital.
You! You!
It turned, face full of malice, eyes cold and fixed as a stuffed snake's. It squatted, and Valentine braced himself for the leap. Tracer cut across his vision like fireflies on Benzedrine. Men in a hidden machine gun nest, covering the open ground between the buildings and the artillery pits, caught the Reaper across the side. It tumbled, closing its legs like a fallen spider, and rose, dragging a leg. Valentine was there in two cat leaps, but he must have looked too much like a jumping Reaper to the machine gun crew. Bullets zipped around him. Valentine dropped to the ground. The Reaper staggered toward him, one side of its body recalcitrant, like that of a stroke victim learning to use his worse-off half again. Valentine heard a Reaper attacking the machine gunners. He rose, spear ready, and realized that once he used Ankh-Az Point, he'd be unarmed. The nearest weapon was with the machine gun crew, now dying under the claws of a sapper. Valentine ran for their gun pit, pursued by the half-leaping, half-staggering stride of the shot-up one. The Reaper in the gun pit was feeding back to him. Valentine jumped from 10 feet away, landed atop its back, and buried the quickwood in its collarbone. The beast never knew what hit it. The quickwood sank into the muscle at the base of its neck before the handle snapped off. Valentine's body blow knocked it flat. It stiffened, legs kicking and hands pulling up fistfuls of earth and black nailed claws. Valentine ignored the bloody ruin of the soldiers and the machine gun nest, noting only that one was a promising soldier named Ralston, who'd qualified at the bottom in marksmanship with his rifle, but when given a tripod and the sliding sights on a squad support gun, came to the head of the class with his accurate grouping. He tore the machine gun from Ralston's limp fingers and fired it in time to see the flash reflected in the eyes of the oncoming Reaper, lit up in the gun's strobe light of muzzle flash as it came toward him. The 7.62mm bullets tore through even the Reaper cloth, blasting back the staggering nightmare into a jigsaw cutout of tarry flesh and broken bone. What was left of the thing rolled around aimlessly, clawing at and opening its wounds in search of the burning pain within, a scorpion stinging itself to death. Valentine opened the gun, put a new ammunition box on the side, let loose the tripod catch, and ran for the hospital. The next 15 minutes were a blur, and would remain so for the rest of his life. Not that he wanted to remember any of it. The fight lived on in his mind as little snapshots of horror. The hospital, looking as though a scythe-wielding tornado had passed through it, leaving Dr. Kirschbaum and Lieutenant Colonel Kessie in mingled pieces. Nail standing, eyes bulging, holding down the Reaper as it stiffened with his spring knife in its eye, feeling its clawed hand digging bloodily into the muscle of his thigh, searching for the femoral artery as it died. The wave of Reapers, a dozen or more, coming across the hillside, throwing aside men like a line of hunters knocking over corn stalks for fun. One Reaper descending into the ready magazine for the 155s and a resultant explosion, lighting up the night and sending a railroad tie skyward like a moonshot. The Bears and Ankh meeting them, backed up by the Thunderbolt's old Marines, clustered in a protective ring around Valentine, pikes and guns working together to knock over the death machines and then pin them until they stiffened. Stiakowski, fear-whitened face like ice in the moonlight, carrying Solon's bow and sending an arrow into a leaping Reaper just before it landed on Post's back. When another Reaper broke the antique as she used it to ward off a blow that threatened to remove her head, she thrust up with another arrow held near the tip, putting the quickwood into its yellow eye. Max, the German Shepherd, a pet of one of the construction engineers, licking the face of his dead owner, stopping only to snarl and stare at anyone who approached the body. The screams of panic from the maternity ward, where the pregnant women had drawn one of the sappers, a dozen men dying as they tried to pull it down as they protected the mothers-to-be with nothing but their knives and scissors. Hurlmer finally sticking a pike into it, his head torn off for the act. the fearful, confused eyes of the last Reaper to die, a wounded beast trying to escape by crawling amongst the cows, harried by Bullet and Pike until it died beneath a feed trough, cornmeal dust sticking to the blood coating its face. All the while, there was rattling fire from the crestline as Quisling troops probed the hill. At dawn, there were 53 corpses lined up. Thanks to the backhoe and a lot of sweat from soldiers with shovels, each would have an individual grave. Woodworkers were hammering together the arrowhead teepee come cross design of a Southern Command grave post and passing them on to painters. The men were gray and haggard after last night's bitter fighting and the probe up the hillside. Valentine pulled as many men out of the line as he could and gathered them by the graves. They had to follow a circuitous path to get there to avoid observation from the spotters on Pulaski Heights. Any gathering of men in the open drew mortar fire. Ceremonies weren't for the dead. They were for the living. There was a lay preacher to say the right words over the bodies. When they were rested in their graves, Valentine walked down the line of bodies in their shrouds, searching for words to add meaning to what had been random slaughter.
We're in a siege, men. This hill is like a medieval castle, and the enemy is at our gates. That enemy, the TMCC, is in the first phase of taking position by siege. It's called the investment. He's already put an effort into destroying us. Last night we killed 18 Reapers, thanks to the Quickwood. 18 Reapers. That means there's more than one Kurian Lord in the area. Perhaps 4 or 5, even 6. Not many Kurians can work more than 2 or 3 Reapers at once. Thanks to the rising that we began across the river, I suspect some governors have already been kicked out of their holes. Last night, they tried to get our lives cheap. We kept the price up, thanks to the Quickwood, your courage, and especially the sacrifice of those killed last night. Solon's investment isn't paying any returns yet. The 53 soldiers we're putting in the ground pinned down thousands of troops with their lives. Those mortars and the guns that will probably soon support them could be used outside Hot Springs or against the Boston Mountains. The forces around the hill, from the snipers to the machine gun crews, are looking up the hill at us instead of at Southern Command's Archangel operation. They're here because our guns are covering the rail and water nexus for Solon's territory. There's no fast and easy way around us. It means moving on broken down roads, crossing bridgeless rivers. Nothing moves by water or rail east-west or north-south without our stopping it. They're not able to shift troops fast enough. And Southern Command's eating up what they can move piecemeal. Every town Southern Command takes is liberated partly by us. Though at the moment we're doing nothing here but having the occasional mortar shell dropped in our laps. Unless we're lucky, the 53 here are going to have more company as the days and weeks go by. It could be that we'll all end up on this hill with them. If that's our fate, I hope we cost the TMCC as much as they did. If any of you want to say anything, now's the time.
Yolanda, the woman who had mutilated the captured guards back at the prison camp, stepped forward.
I've something to say. It's not right for such men to go into the ground without a flag to be under. They are soldiers. Soldiers are their flag. So I made them one. The men who came in to get us, I thought of them as I made this. Stiakowski helped me with the wording, and Amy Jo on the mortar team drew the animal.
She held it up. It was not a big flag. The base of it was red, rimmed with blue and gold roping, probably from a curtain somewhere in Solon's imperial residence. In the center was a silhouette of a tusked Arkansas razorback in black, pawing the ground angrily and lowering its head to charge. Blue letters stood out against the red as if luminescent. "Don't feed on me," read the block letter slogan. The men laughed, not at the amateurish nature of the flag, but at the pithy sentiment it expressed. They liked it. Valentine felt a little electricity run through the men as she turned it so everyone could see. It was a fighting flag, black and blue set against red, the colors of a brawl. A team could rally round the image of an animal that was part of the Lifeweaver Hunter cast appeal, and a savage boar was as good as any. Wily, tough, stubborn, a brute that would gore any animal that dared hunt it, and ugly as its mood when challenged, it suited the dirty funeral attendees. Valentine went to Yolanda's side, and Siakowski came forward to admire the flag in the sun. Three parallel wounds, probably Reaper claw marks, stood out on her forehead.
Let's have it up. Anka, where's the pike Hurlmer got that one with?
Anka walked along the graves until he found the aluminum conduit pipe. It took a few minutes to rig wire through the grommets and fix it to the pole. Valentine recognized Yolanda from the prison yard, but he only knew Amy Jo as one of the heroes from the hospital fight. She'd snatched up the infant Perry and barricaded the baby and his mother in a bathroom, holding the door shut as the Reaper pried it off its hinges before it was swamped by pursuing men.
Where do you want it, sir?
Here at the graves. You said they deserve a flag above them. Can you think of a better place?
Make some more, or at least another, for the headquarters. This battalion needs an emblem.
Hell with the prisoners. We're a regiment.
Valentine's Razors.
Siakowski dug the pole into the ground, and Amy Jo and Yolanda found rocks to pile about its base. It wasn't a big flag, nor was it high off the ground, but every eye was on it as it flapped in the fresh spring breeze. After the memorial service dispersed, Valentine consulted his new lieutenant.
What kind of shape is the battery in, Hansen?
Is piss poor an appropriate military description?
Can you quantify it a little more?
Those Reapers that came up the cliff, half of them made straight for the guns. That suicide mission into the Ready magazine, I lost men there. Ives, Lincoln, and Lopez bought it in their gun pit. We found Straightener in a tree. Smalls is missing. Joseph's is...
Smalls? Hank Smalls?
Yes. Well, he was designated as a messenger. When I heard the firing at the base of the hill, I sent him to tell the mortar pits to start pre-registered fire missions. He never came back. There's still some woodland that we haven't searched yet. Maybe he ran and hid. Has been too scared to come out yet. Can't say as I blame him.
How many guns can you have in action?
I'm Jimmy in the list, so I can keep firing three, sir. It won't be quick fire, and I'd like another 20 men to start training.
We're thin as it is. But ask Lieutenant Post about it.
Thanks, sir.
Feel free to practice on the Kurian Tower. No shell fired at that is wasted, as far as I'm concerned.
In all honesty, sir, I'm not sure I'm up to being battery officer. Could you give me a new commander? Like Siakowski. She knows the theory, and she's good at putting theory into practice.
I'll talk it over with her.
Thanks, sir. We'll get him firing again.
I'll talk to Beck about getting your Ready magazine rebuilt.
Yeah, it's probably landing in Berlin right about now.
Valentine finished his walk of the perimeter. The men were in better spirits than he would have expected. Killing the Reapers and resisting the probe had made them confident. What success they enjoyed should be shared with Beck's defenses. There were clearings along the easier paths up the hill for open fields of fire and a series of foxholes and trenches, many lined with logs, for the men to do their shooting. They were still digging dugouts for the men to wait out shellfire, adding interconnecting trenches and access to the flatter hilltop so the men could bring food and water forward safely, and laying mines and wire along likely alleys of approach. Valentine saw one of Kessie's, now Hansen's, forward observers teaching the other soldiers the defensive fire mission zones. With the use of a simple code word, they could call in mortar fire on their attackers. He returned to the headquarters building and asked around for Siakowski. She was in her usual spot, beneath the speaker in the radio lounge, eating a bowl full of rice and milk. Her skin had that translucent look to it again. She'd been pushing herself too hard.
What's that?
Rice pudding. Narcisse made it.
Don't you ever sleep. You were up all last night.
Listening to the radio is like sleep. I can zone. What I really need is food.
I'd still rather see you flat on your back.
Major, under the uniform code, I believe you just made a sexual suggestion.
That's not what I meant, and you know it.
I was trying to make a joke. You look like you need one.
Hank Smalls is missing. Since last night. Hansen sent him with a message. He never came back.
A Reaper?
Could be. We never knew how many they sent in, just how many we killed. Ugh, poor kid.
And naturally, you're blaming yourself.
I did dig you up for a reason.
I need your help. How'd you like a change of duty?
The bears? I know Lieutenant Nail's hurt again.
Sorry. Hansen isn't confident in his ability to run the battery. I want to put you in charge of it.
I only know mortars.
But you know the theory, right?
Of course.
You've done everything I've asked you. You can do this too. Those guns have to be kept good and lethal. They're the reasons the Quislings are all corked up.
Major Valentine, I've got a question for you if you don't mind.
Shoot.
Last night, you sent me down into the communications bunker. That's the safest place on this hill. Even a Reaper would have trouble clawing through that door Solon had put in. Why did you want me there of all places?
I noticed you didn't stay. You're my second in command. I couldn't risk us both being killed.
I'll take over the battery if you take my place in the headquarters. I heard what you did last night. Running around in the dark with Reapers everywhere. I've been scared all day thinking about it.
Are you afraid of having to take command?
Not that. I...
Courier, Major Valentine. A courier's come in. She's asking for you, and she said for you to hurry.
She?
Yes. Popped up on the west side. Pretty gal. Red hair. Says she's your mama, but she's too young for that. I think she climbed the cliff. Just like the Reapers.
Where is she?
Eating in the main galley.
Thanks. Sounds like we're getting intelligence. Wanna come?
For news? Naturally.
They found Alessa Duvalier shoveling rehydrated scrambled eggs into her mouth. She had changed into an outfit Valentine knew as her traveling clothes. She wore a long, deep-pocketed riding coat, wide-brimmed hat, hiking boots, and a backpack blanket roll combination.
Hello, Allie. Tired of the showgirl routine?
They got you boxed in tight here, Val. I had to wade across a swamp to even get to that damn cliff. This sort of reminds me of the day we met.
Then it must be important.
First, Ham's back in town with his whole division. Another's moving for Pine Bluff. They won't be there for a couple of days, maybe. Bad roads, gorillas, mines, and no rail. Ham's gonna be going across the river in small boats to get south.
You're not going along.
He's always been unpleasant. Last night, he was a bastard. Mean as a stuck pig. The Trans-Mississippi is crashing down around his ears. He's angry at everyone. Executed a junior officer himself.
Anything from us?
Yes. 2 days ago, a cat came in from Mantilla. He got your answer, and it's in this letter. What good can come of it beats me. We had to run risks to get this to you. Hope it was worth it.
Valentine opened the envelope and looked at the page. A few bare paragraphs, handwritten, told him what he suspected.
Where are you off to, Duvalier?
South. Every cat's on the hunt for Solon. He was supposed to be assassinated at the outset of all this, but the cat shadowing him missed. He disappeared, and the cat's dead.
Damn. Ham's division is moving on, too.
He was supposed to dust you off this hill cheap. They were supposed to take you out while the Reapers were up here causing trouble. But there was some screw-up at headquarters. Only half his division got here in time. The K's lost a lot of Reapers. I think they're going to blame him.
What happened that made you choose last night to leave?
He said something about wanting to climb this hill and piss on your body. Accused me of sneaking with you. I think I was going to be arrested. When he went to the CP, I took off. Around morning, I came up on some pickets along the old interstate north of you. They were talking about how you were still up there. Thought I might as well deliver the message before moving on.
And check to see if I was still breathing?
I brought you along as a cat. Call it a family interest. Hope the packet helps.
Your soaking was worthwhile. What's your opinion on X-Ray Tango?
Typical high-ranking goon. I did hear a rumor from Ham. The Reapers took his wife away some years back. They thought she was a cat.
Remember our invocation? The blood in our palms.
Yes, of course.
Wonder if that's what passed on our abilities. Something in the bloodstream. Maybe she somehow passed on some abilities to him.
I don't know Lifeweaver technomagic. Hope it's not something that would show up on some kind of blood test. Might make it easier for them to find us.
Perish the thought.
Sorry I can't be more helpful. Don't try to figure Quislings, especially high-ranking ones. Might as well try to win over a scorpion.
Feel free to load up with whatever you need. I'd like to ask one more favor of you, though.
What would that be?
The sound of your voice.
It felt a little like a producer doing radio theater that night. Valentine, Stiakowski, Jimenez, and Duvalier were crammed into the little room, each holding a page of notes. Jimenez twiddled the dials.
We're on TMCC New Columbia Band now. Contact GHQ New Columbia. Do you read? Over.
GHQ here, reading 5-5.
I have priority comm from Colonel Lassan on Big Rock Mountain to General Ham. He requests that the General come to the mic, wishes to discuss terms of surrender. Over.
Milton, cut the crap.
Check your RDF and signal strength. I'm just up the hill from you. Over.
This is Colonel Lassan, boy. Get the General to the radio, Ricky Tick, would you? Standing by.
Acknowledge.
You really think turning this into a soap opera will work?
Life's been hard on him lately. I want to make it all my fault.
This is Stanislaw, GHQ, New Columbia, with General Ham online. Do you read? Over.
Zippity-doo-dah! He went for it.
Colonel Lassan here. Put the General on the phone.
I'm here, you turncoat. They said you wanted to do a deal.
Yes. I'm in charge of guerrilla activity north of the river. I'm in a position to accept your surrender.
Drop dead, Dunk. Signing off.
Any unarmed man who comes up the switchback road will be taken prisoner. No reprisals.
Lassan, if you called me here to joke around, let me tell you my terms.
Hey, Hambone. Guess who this is? Yes, sir. I'm up here, too. You were right about one thing. Knox and I had a little fling. He's a man with a future, treats me good. And you know what they say about Indian guys.
Get stuffed.
Duvalier checked her notes.
I told him all about you, Hambone. To all those out in Radio Land, tune in at 0100 for a detailed description of just how pathetic General Ham is in bed, complete with what he begged me to do to him. Sorry, General. Knox said this was just too good to keep from the world. We had quite a laugh.
There was no response. Stiakowski took over the microphone, and Jimenez switched it to a different frequency.
This is Ozark Central Command. Ozark Central Command to all stations. Latest intelligence has 3rd Division moving south of the river. Activate zones Nuthatch and Finch. Alert Jay and Crane. Authentication Z4, repeat Z4, P9, repeat P9. Signing off.
Jimenez killed the transmitter as she finished the farrago of nonsense.
That'll give him something to chew on.
I hope he chokes on it.
Valentine put Duvalier in his room, ordering her to get some sleep before her after-midnight broadcast.
Oh, makes me feel like a whore, but if you think it'll help...
Valentine transcribed a few bedroom details about General Ham. Valentine wrote it so there were 5 minutes of gossip, then a teaser for the next night's performance, describing what Ham liked to do to elicit an erection. Then he had the observers fire a star shell above the river while the moon was down. There was no sign of boat activity. The 3rd Division showed a lot of activity in its posts. Valentine gathered Stiakowski, Post, and Beck for a late-night briefing.
I want us to be extra alert this morning. Anyone else notice an increase in activity?
Yes. Spotters saw a ferry shuttling back and forth upriver in the last 4 days.
I'd rather have that division busy with us than moving down to Hot Springs. Earlier this evening, we stuck a couple of banderillas in Ham. Tonight, Smoke is going to wave the red cape. He might charge at dawn.
With the division?
That's my guess. He'll try to overwhelm us. Captain Post, get every man you can into your line, but quietly. Captain Beck, I want you in the Western Command Post. Send out pickets to listen. Again, quietly.
Yes, sir.
Stiakowski, have all your gun crews ready. Good people on the mortars. We'll be dropping shells close to our lines.
I'll have everyone on station at 3 a.m.
Major Valentine, report to the radio room, please.
Excuse me, please.
Valentine made his way down the hall and to the stairs. There were crowds of men in the radio lounge, grinning and joking.
So, we're gonna be on the news.
Really? Well, by God, we should be. You're causing Kerr a lot of grief for only 1,400 men. We're tying down something like 10,000, you know.
Yeah, go tell the Spartans.
Valentine went down to the radio room, where Jimenez's relief was at the headset.
I've got Baltic League on shortwave, sir. They're doing the news. In the news summary, they mentioned us, and we're about to catch the repeat broadcast.
Pipe it up, good and loud. Hell, put it on the loudspeakers.
In the Caucasus continues. Another Kurian lord in the Rhone Valley went the way of his cousin last month when humanist guerrillas seized his chateau, proving that the flames of resistance still burn in Western Europe. This is Radio Baltic League, broadcasting in the first language of freedom to humanity's patriots around the Baltic and around the globe, finishing the European part of the broadcast. Turning to America, an update on the news flash earlier. We have more details from Southern Command in the Ozark Mountains, lately the scene of heavy fighting. General Martinez reports that forces in his organization infiltrated, seized, and destroyed a major supply base on the Arkansas River, formerly the city of Little Rock. For those of you mapping at home, that's a major red, white, and blue flag for our cause. General Martinez's command has guns on a nearby hill commanding the entire town, and recently sank river traffic moving to resupply the forces engaged with Southern Command on the South Arkansas front. He reports that the senior officer on the scene in command of the guns, Lieutenant Colonel Kessie, was wounded in the action, but has hopes for her speedy recovery. Congratulations to the daring and resourceful general. This morning's broadcast is in tribute to you and your men fighting on the Arkansas. Turning to other news from America, with spring coming to the Green Mountains and the St. Lawrence Seaway.
Valentine forced a smile across his face and went up into the radio lounge. The men garnered there looked like they'd been slapped.
What the hell was that, sir?
Yeah, Major, that ain't right.
What part isn't right? Did they get the location wrong?
No.
The Lieutenant Colonel's dead. You can't expect them to know that detail. I've only just reported it.
It's not that, sir. They didn't mention you. Valentine's Razors, we're the ones that done it. Martinez,
He's in charge of the central part of Arkansas. I send my reports to him, and he communicates them to Southern Command. They don't know everything that happened in his camp yet.
Well, but it's not right for him to...
Sergeant, let's try to stay alive until this is over. They'll get the story right. Just take some time. Get some food and rest, men. We might be busy tomorrow morning.
The next morning, they came in fire and thunder. Duvalier's short broadcast gave the men a chuckle before they crept into Beck's fortifications. Soldiers always enjoyed a general getting his ego pricked. The harassing fire started at 3 a.m., the mortars on Pulaski Heights peppering the whole hilltop with shells. Most of the men were in their trenches and posts, and those who weren't underground ran to safety in a hurry. Valentine participated in the battle from the basement of one of the smaller buildings on the hilltop between the gun pits and the Western Command post. All he saw of it was shell fire. All he heard of it was over scratchy field phone lines. The men on Pulaski Heights came first. They'd obviously been given orders to pressure them with a river crossing, to look as if the attack were going to come by water. Stiakowski dropped a few flechette shells among their boats, and the Quislings thought again about sacrificing their lives just to draw the attention of the artillery. The listeners returned to their lines before light, with reports of men coughing, swearing, and giving quiet orders. Beck ordered his handful of claymores, mines that swept the ground before a position with bursts of dart-like fragments like an enormous shotgun shell, placed above where they were concentrating. When dawn came, the artillery started. The divisional artillery was on the other side of Park Hill. Valentine wished he had a few trained men and a radio somewhere with a view. If Southern Command saw fit to send him a company or two of wolves and a bear team... Their shooting was poor compared to the mortars across the river. Shells landed all over the hill, damaging little but the turf. The besiegers were at the bottom of the hill in the pre-dawn gloom. Valentine listened into the field phone chatter. Kessie had had her guns set up, so the observers and officers on the line called the mortar pits directly without having to go through her, trusting the individual mortar crews to prioritize the use of their shells. Stiakowski had been relentlessly training the men on the system ever since. The mortars went into action first, dropping their shells all around the base of the hill. The assault came. Ham struck from two directions, the north and the east, both driving to cut off the men at the tip of the finger of the hill extending eastward to get control of the road going up the hill Valentine had used on his first trip to Solon's residence. Stiakowski used her guns to form a curtain of steel along the north face of the hill. Valentine paced and waited, watching the trees along the top of the eastern fingers for signs of the Quisling troops. He forced himself not to call every time the firing quieted, and the company commanders had enough on their hands without him calling for status reports in the middle of action.
Danger close! Danger close!
One of the forward observers was calling in fire just in front of his own position. That the Quislings were partway up the hill this soon was troubling.
Post, take over here. I'm going forward.
There's no trench, Major...
Valentine had a soldier's eye for ground. His route to Beck's command post was determined by cover rather than directness. He scrambled through the fallen scrub oaks, along foundations of old buildings, and then up a little wash to Beck's position on the north face of the hill. Beck was at a viewing slit in his wood and earth bunker, looking west down the ridge, pointing toward the train station. He had a band of dirt across his face the same size as the slit, giving him a raccoon-like expression.
They're not having any luck from the east. Too much fire from the notched hill by the war memorial. They're coming up hard on the north side. Jesus, there it goes again. They're using flamethrowers. Sergeant, call in more mortar fire where that flame's coming from.
Captain Beck wants reinforcements of mortar fire at the flamethrowers.
Valentine looked at the little gouts of flame as the sergeant spoke into his field phone, binoculars in his other hand. Beck passed his own glasses to Valentine. Valentine surveyed what he could of the north side of the hill. There were mottled TMCC uniforms along it, all lying in the same direction like freshly cut hay. Some gutsy company officer fired a signal flare, and the aligned figures stood and began to run up the hill. Beck tore the glasses from his face and flicked a switch on a fuse box. Explosions blossomed across the hill as the signal traveled the wire, little poofs of smoke shooting down the hill like colored sugar blown through a straw.
The Claymores.
Valentine saw the Abaca brothers moving forward, great belts of ammunition about their necks like brass stoles.
They're turning around.
Lieutenant Zhao's back in the machine gun post. He says they're heading back down the hill.
They tried again. According to Beck, the second attack showed nothing like the patience and skill of the first. Ham concentrated all his gunfire on the easternmost tip of the hill, until a permanent cloud of thrown-up smoke and dirt hung at the end of the hill, constantly renewed by further shellfire. But the men there held. The machine guns weren't silenced. As fast as they came up, they turned around and went down.
Yes! We broke the second wave! Ha! They're running!
And the 3rd Division's bad luck continues. Cease fire! Cease fire!
Why?
Let them run. I want the others to get the idea. So next time they come, they'll have to start from scratch, not halfway up.
Valentine surveyed the devastated ridge. Stretcher bearers braved sniper fire to bring in the wounded, and Valentine had come forward to see to those wounded. Pickups converted to ambulances were bumping across the shell-holed road to take them back to the hospital building. God, and there's only one doctor. Valentine knelt beside a wounded man and started cleaning the dirt and blood off his face.
Valentine, time for me to be moving on.
Valentine glanced up at Duvalier.
Interested in lugging a radio up Park Hill tonight?
No, sorry. Suicide isn't my style. I've got another assignment. They think Solon's outside Hot Springs. The cats are concentrating. Someone will get him.
Is he so important?
Wherever he goes, the Quislings do better for some reason. He's like a lucky charm.
Valentine went back to cleaning the soldier's face. The man's elbow was torn up, and the skin on his forearm and hand already had a gray look to it. He'd never use his right hand again.
They won't try that again, will they, sir?
They're dumb, but they're not that dumb. You taught them about touching hot stoves.
It was them bears, sir. They backed up our platoon. When the flamethrower burned out the machine gun crew, they went down and got him, then held the machine gun post, flames and all. We took the line back after that.
Good teamwork, hero.
Valentine looked up at Duvalier. She stared at him. Strangely intent.
Take off. It's getting dark. If you pass a TMCC mail pouch while you're sneaking through the lines, drop a note in for X-ray Tango. Tell them I want to have a word.
Val, if you guys get pushed off here, make for the south bank. There's good cover in the hills.
We're here to stay, Allie. In the ground or above it.
She hugged him from behind. He felt her lips brush the back of his neck. Then she was gone. There was a week-long respite from all save harassing fire. The Quislings were being careful with their shells, so only one or two an hour landed on the hill. Sometimes they would ratchet up the fire into a bombardment, so every time a shell landed, Valentine tensed, waiting to see if others would follow. It was exhausting. The only thing Valentine remembered about the period between the 3rd Division attack and the arrival of the Crocodile was Nail's recovery. Dr. Brow reported that one day the wounded bear simply sat up and swung his legs off the bed, then walked downstairs for breakfast. He returned to command of the Bears and reorganized his tiny but ferocious group. With wounds from the Reaper fight healed, his teams were back at full strength, which was something that couldn't be said for the rest of the command. The bonfire they'd held to celebrate the victory was lit with the flames of Pyrrhus. The hospital overflowed with the bloody debris of his victory over his old general. Beck's line was a series of points. If the enemy came again, as they had the first day of the attack, they would go through it like floodwaters through a screen door. Then the first rail car struck. The men called them that because it was what they sounded like as they roared overhead, looking like red comets of sparks. They struck like meteorites, causing the ground to writhe and shake in an explosive earthquake. The shells landed all through the long night, every hour at the hour, precisely. The timing made the shelling even worse. Each man, Valentine included, dreaded the rise of the minute hand toward the top of the clock. One overshot the hill and splashed into the Arkansas River, while others killed men just from the concussion. Valentine saw one man with either a part of a lung or a stomach sticking out of his mouth. Others died without so much as a tooth being found. The explosions drove man and animal mad. Max, the German Shepherd, had to be put down after he attacked anyone who came near. The wounded in the hospital had to be tied into their bunks to keep from crawling under them, tearing out IV lines. A roomy-eyed old guard reported to Valentine in the blackboard-walled briefing room. Post stood next to him.
It's the crocodile, sir. That's what we called it, anyway. They tell me from a distance it's all bumpy and green, and the tug tower sticks up like an eye.
I've never heard of it.
It's a grog thing out of St. Louis. She shelled us from 20 miles away on the Missouri when we were dug in during the siege on the Berbus in 61. She's naval artillery. She goes on the water and they move her around in an armored barge, like a battleship. I think they put the gun together on the banks, but nobody knows for sure.
Solon's called in the grogs. He must be desperate.
You may get a chance to find out. A messenger came forward at 0900 on the dot, under a flag of truce. He had a letter from X-Ray Tango. I guess Ham's been relieved because it's signed General X-Ray Tango, CINC, New Columbia State, Trans-Mississippi. No demands, just a parley.
X-Ray Tango was waiting when Valentine emerged from the lines. Nail and Anka stood alongside, Nail carrying the white flag. They met on an old residential road at the base of the hill. The growth had been blasted and burned by shellfire. The general's spasm-afflicted eye sent out mental distress signals like Morse code.
Colonel Lesang?
General X-Ray Tango.
Both still alive, I see.
I should have shot Solon and you when I had the chance on that hill back in March. Would have been a nice change. The commanders kill each other and the privates live.
What are you suggesting? A duel? We both take our pistols, walk 10 paces, and shoot? Winner gets the hill?
Save a lot of blood, General.
You know it's ridiculous. Change the subject.
You sent the message, General. What are we to discuss?
Your surrender. Prevent the further effusion of blood. I believe that's the traditional wording.
You're working for the experts in the effusion of blood, General.
Forget it, Lesane. I'll go back and blow you off that hill.
General, suppose we step over under that tree and talk.
That's better. A smart man knows when his bluff's called.
They walked along the old road at the base of the hill, leaving Nail, Anka, and X-Ray Tango's aides looking across the road at each other. A red oak sprouted from a crack in the pavement, now big enough to offer them some shade in the late morning sun. A dead apartment complex watched them with empty eyes.
Just out of curiosity, General, what happened to Ham?
He was relieved.
Permanently, I take it. What are the terms, General?
Very generous, Lesane. Very generous indeed. These come from Solon and all the governors. Each has allowed their seal on the deal.
I can just hear my last words as the Reaper picks me up. The seals are in order.
It's got my name on it, too, if that means anything to you. It says you and your men can walk away. You can travel wherever you want with your small arms. Join Southern Command's lines for all we care. Just get out of New Columbia.
That's simple, huh?
We kept it simple so you could understand it.
I need to contact my higher-ups.
Oh, Colonel. I almost forgot. One more gesture of good faith for you. Bring him forward.
One of X-Ray Tango's aides waved, and two soldiers stood up from the brushes, a slight figure between them. It was Hank. Valentine held his breath as they brought the boy forward, fearing some sort of sadistic display. The boy had his right hand swathed in bandages. He was thin and haggard.
What did you do to him?
That's a story, Colonel. He was being questioned, you see, by General Ham himself.
I didn't tell them anything, sir.
No, he didn't. Ham took the boy to a charcoal grill. He threatened to cook the boy's hand there on the grate, smash it down like a hamburger with a spatula. Wanted to know who the spy at his headquarters was, like some kid would know. Your boy here stuck his own hand into the coals, stared right at Ham until he passed out. One of the men there puked from the smell.
Hank.
Take him back with you. Your whole command in the person of a prepubescent boy. What'll it be, Lassane? Do they live or die? Does this brave kid live or die? Up to you.
I'll see you later.
You have till sunset. After then, anyone coming off the hill is dead. You've already had some deserters. This is your last chance.
No, General. It's yours.
Pretty pathetic threat.
You're fighting two wars, General. One with me, and one with your conscience. The things you've seen, the people you've helped, you've been on the wrong side your whole life. You should have talked to your wife more.
Huh?
She was a cat. Same as me. The Life Weavers train us to assassinate Kurians, Quisling generals, what have you. Maybe she was on an assignment to kill you, maybe. But she saw some hope in you, Scotty.
That is horseshit.
You suppose they killed her quick or slow?
Shut up. Shut up. I made my offer. You have till sundown.
They probably killed her. Maybe she was hung. In New Orleans, I used to hear the guys in the wagons talk about a last ride for the women they...
Shut your fucking mouth!
What kind of sword is hanging over your head, General? How thick's the thread? You don't get us off this hill in hip-hop time, they'll haul you off, I bet. Brass ring or no. I saw one taken once. They jerked the ring right off, along with the owner's finger.
Balls!
X-ray Tango's left fist exploded toward Valentine's jaw. Valentine slipped under it and just dodged a right cross that he only saw coming at the last split second. A jab by Valentine bounced off a beefy triceps. X-ray Tango squared on him, and the cat's vision exploded into dueling rainbows. All the colors of the spectrum and a few Valentine didn't know existed danced to the ringing in his ears. He brought his forearms up to cover his face and saw a fuzzy apparition between his parallel radii. X-ray Tango took the opportunity to work Valentine's stomach, the blows like the kicks of an entire team of mules. Valentine lashed out, but it only left him open for a combination that left him looking at the grass as the mists cleared. X-ray Tango advanced, his fists turning tight circles in front of his massive shoulders.
Should have taken your dose and gone down, Valentine.
Valentine saw men from both sides gathering, emerging from their holes and trenches and piled rubble redoubts to watch the fight. Even those who stayed behind with their weapons stood atop headlogs and sandbags to see the action. Valentine tried a combination. But the big arms came up, and he just missed losing part of his jaw to X-ray Tango's riposte.
Who do you really want to hit, General?
X-ray Tango stepped in with lethal speed and tried the uppercut that had started the music still echoing in Valentine's ears, but the cat stepped out of the way. The blows came like an artillery barrage, but every time the general's fist cut nothing but empty air. Valentine sidestepped, backstepped, but there were no ropes to pin him, just an ever-shifting circle of soldiers.
Shadowboxing, General. You're shadowboxing. Quit fighting me and fight them.
They're fighting for the hill! A duel! General Estes is winning against the Red Renegade!
How are you gonna win if you never hit back?
Valentine bent under another combination, slipped under X-ray Tango's reach, and came up behind the general and tapped him on the shoulder.
Did she ever ask you to desert, Scotty?
Yeah!
X-ray Tango lunged, swinging laced fingers as though he held a sword to take Valentine's head off. Valentine ducked under it, and the momentum of his blow carried X-ray Tango off balance. Valentine helped him to the ground with a cross.
Southern Command is winning!
Ecstasy's a champ, you dunk!
X-ray Tango rolled to his feet with the same grace that seemed so out of place in his big frame. Suddenly, his feet were against Valentine's chest as he launched himself at Valentine with a two-heel kick. and both opponents fell backward to the ground. The general rolled, got a hold of Valentine's leg, and it was a ground fight. Against most other men, X-Ray Tangle's weight would have ended the contest, but Valentine got a hold of an elbow and kept X-Ray Tangle's face in the dirt so he couldn't breathe. Valentine forced the arm up, up. The arm suddenly gave way with horrid ease. Valentine sprang to his feet, let the general up.
You're done.
So are you. We're gonna roll up your men like a...
The general lost. You're to retreat west, home to Texas, or Oklahoma.
No! That wasn't what this was about.
He's trying to back out of it.
Back to your post! Back to your post! Open fire on this rabble!
Wilson Quisling!
Back up the hill, men! He's lost and he's not squaring up!
The two groups of men parted like magnets pressed positive to positive. Two floods of dirty soldiery retreated in opposite directions. Valentine carried Hank up the hill himself. Responsibility. Valentine had dreamed, on his long trip back across Texas, of being able to give up the burden, turn his command over to higher ranks, let someone else make the decisions for a while, and lie awake nights because of the consequences. This was a decision he couldn't make. He tried to consult higher authority. He had raised Southern Command on the radio and got a colonel in intelligence.
As the officer commanding locally, you're better able to evaluate the situation and reconcile your orders to keep as many as you can of the enemy tied down as long as possible, denying traffic across the enemy's road, river, and rail network, rather than someone who had to be apprised of the situation over the radio.
Thanks for nothing.
Valentine retreated to his room.